Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. Hi, Roddy. What's up, man? You relaxed?
Yeah. My first time being any sort of podcast format or anything.
What? So, I thought all you millennials are always on podcasts.
Yeah, you would think so, but...
Yeah. How old are you, Ronnie?
I am 30.
30?
Yeah.
So you're definitely a dead set millennial.
Yeah. Yeah.
How long have you been out of school?
I graduated in 2016.
Okay. What have you been up to?
I've been working with Dr. Dhaval Patel in Roseville.
Okay. Is that your first job out of school?
It is. It is.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about as an associate. Okay, so the theme of our program today, our interview with you, is growing as an associate. Mm-hmm. I'm with Dr. Ronnie Tay from, I call it Sacramento. Okay, mm-hmm. I know you're technically in Folsom, California.
Yeah, I live in Folsom.
Yeah. So talk to me about what someone out of school is looking for in an associate.
So, you know, when I was looking for jobs, mm-hmm. You know, I was...
Are we always looking for jobs, by the way?
I feel like when you're going out of school, it's different because, you know, you want to always start off your career the right way.
Okay.
And for me, you know, you hear a lot in school about mixed signals. You have all these DSOs coming in and telling you, you know, this is the way to go. And you hear from other people that private practice is the way to go. So for me, I was just applying to a lot of different positions and kind of just seeing what was there.
Okay.
And...
Did you find a shortage of opportunities?
There were positions available. Okay. As a new grad, it was a little bit more difficult in order to get... I landed a lot of interviews, mm-hmm. But I didn't get a lot of offers starting off.
Is it because... Why do you think that was?
I think a lot of it has to do with dentists not wanting to have to deal with that initial kind of ramp up that associates have to do.
Okay.
There's a lot of training.
So when you say dentist, are you referring mm-hmm. to private practice dentists?
Private practice, along with other... dentists as well in general. I don't think it's necessarily limited to dentists.
Were DSOs more open to having new grads?
I feel like they are, definitely.
Okay. So when you say you had a lot of interviews but not a lot of offers, mm-hmm. that would be from what I would consider the private practice realm.
Yes.
Okay. So in other words, maybe a dentist like myself, one office, maybe dentists have a couple of offices, mm-hmm. but when it came to on the DSO side, you felt that they were much more open to hiring and not having an issue dealing with the ramp up of having a new grad.
Yeah. And a lot of it, you know, a lot of the DSOs were more willing to offer a guarantee.
Okay.
And as an associate, frankly, I didn't really know what to expect. I've never been a real dentist before. I mean, I was in dental school.
Was the alternative, a fake dentist?
Yeah, I was a baby dentist.
Okay.
So, you know, in dental school, you're learning about, you know, how to treat patients well and the clinical aspect of it, but you don't really know much about the whole compensation side and all that kind of stuff. So you want to make sure you have some sort of floor.
How important is a guarantee to you?
Initially, it's very important because you don't know what to expect in private practice. I mean,
How important is the guarantee looking back now?
I think it was important initially because your diagnosis and your speed isn't quite there. Okay. But after about 6 months out, I felt like it wasn't really that necessary anymore.
So let's talk about that period, okay? Mm-hmm. So you're talking about something that's near and dear to me, mm-hmm. and that is that, and it's amazing that you said that 6 month period, because I always joke, semi-jokingly say that dental school, you run out of that education about 6 months after you get mm-hmm. out of school. And at that point, you're beyond, or you've kind of maxed out your dental school skills. Yeah. What did you do to get past that ramp up period to get through that as quickly as you did?
For me, I think it was just trying to implement as much as possible.
What do you mean? Implement what?
So, you know, working with a mentor, mm-hmm. I always try to look back and see every single crown prep that I did, every single filling that I did, every single restoration exam. I'm always looking at seeing what I could have done better.
Okay.
Did I miss something? I'm always looking for feedback, whether it's from my doctor, my assistant, you know, talking to the patient. It's always important for me to always try and get a better result every single time I'm doing a procedure.
Do you think all your colleagues are that way coming out of school?
I think so. I think most dentists have a desire to learn and do better with their patients. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as a whole, I feel like in order to do better, you just have to work at it and keep going.
All right, so let's talk about getting this feedback. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to an associate or one, you know, 9 months out of school? Mm-hmm. At this point, most of them be 7-8 months out of school, mm-hmm. Or even 1 year and 7 months out of school. What advice would you give to them to get past that ramp up period a little quicker? What could you have done differently looking back to get through that quicker?
I don't know if there's anything that we necessarily could have done to get through it quicker, because when you're doing your first 50 crowns, your next set of 50 crowns after that's going to be better. Mm-hmm. It's going to be faster. It's going to be more efficient. But I think just taking the time and slowing down initially and focusing on doing things correctly, mm-hmm. rather than doing things quickly.
Okay. So that's efficiency versus effectiveness.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I really think being efficient, trying to, you know, not change your burrs every 10 seconds, mm-hmm. and trying to do, you know, adequate occlusal reduction the first time, or trying to make sure you're being thorough when you're doing everything in a set sequence, mm-hmm. and trying to be efficient about it, and knowing that the more times you do something a certain way, the speed will come.
How much do you think technology played a role in your ramp up period?
It played a huge role.
Talk to me about that.
You know, we use a lot of Cerec. We don't use mm-hmm. it for everything, but with Cerec, there's no hiding your restorations.
Your preparations.
No. If you're under-reducing, the software is going to tell you. No. If you have a sharp line angle, the software is going to tell you. It's very unforgiving in that sense. But each time you have your preparation blown up 20 times, you can see every single imperfection.
You can see your burr marks.
Yeah, you can see everything.
You can see your margins, like what mm-hmm. you thought was smooth is not so smooth.
Yeah. And even to this day, you know, I still see some spots where I could have improved better, but you know, working on that and being able to put two and two together on the actual preparation versus what I'm seeing in the mouth, that's something that's helped me significantly.
So one of the things I always talk to, or I hear, and many of my colleagues talk about for a new dentist, is to gain confidence. Mm-hmm. And what I often hear them talking about is gaining confidence in the clinical arena, mm-hmm. but I don't ever hear enough about gaining confidence in the communication mm-hmm. arena. In other words, gaining patients' trusts, mm-hmm. what I call diagnosis skills. Mm-hmm. Okay. What advice can you give somebody on that? How did you, or have you even, gained more confidence in the diagnosis and the patient communication aspect?
I feel like that's the most important part of it all. You can't do any crowns if nobody wants you to do their crown.
Yeah, they don't trust you to do it.
Exactly. And, you know, my philosophy is always be genuine mm-hmm. with the patient. Treat them as if you're treating your mom, your sister. I know it's cliche, but patients can sense when you're trying to sell them something versus when you're trying to educate them on what they need, you know, what's going on in their mouths. And I didn't believe, you know, this when I first started out, mm-hmm. but just because you tell a patient the first time that they need something doesn't mean that they'll get it that right at that moment. But you plant a seed, and even now I'm seeing patients that I diagnosed stuff 6 months ago, a year ago, a year and a half ago, and they're finally coming in and they're ready to get this treatment done. Mm-hmm. And you see that change, and it really makes you feel like, you know what, just because they don't do it the first time doesn't mean it's a failure in communication.
So you're probably beating yourself up a little bit when you didn't get case acceptance in the very beginning, mm-hmm. because you're like, what did I do wrong that the patient didn't say yes? And the truth is honestly, you know, probably 95% of our patients don't say yes right away. Mm-hmm. You know, so few of our patients say yes right away to our treatment plans, right? Minus emergencies, broke teeth, mm-hmm. you know, hurting teeth, things like that. You know, 95% of our patients are normal, mm-hmm. you know, and normal is not saying yes.
Yeah.
You know, and so one of the things I'm hearing you say is don't necessarily let that get to you. Continue and consistently work on your communication skills, but know that the work you're doing today may not sow a harvest or a crop for 9 months or a year or a year and a half of down the road.
Yeah. It's an investment in time, and you're building up your patient base, and you're still, you know, even if your skills are improving, you're still working on communication and conveying that to patients, yeah. and that takes time.
Right. What made you choose a DSO organization versus private practice as your home out of dental school?
They were the only place that gave me an offer.
Okay, so that's one thing. Yeah. But that's their good because you turned out to be a great person.
Absolutely. And, yeah. you know, they always talk about mentorship. Mm-hmm. And I landed with a great mentor, and that's made all the difference, I think.
Did you land there or did you choose there?
A little bit of both. Okay. I mean, I knew it was a good fit the moment we had the interview.
Okay.
And I was hoping that I would be able to land with him.
Okay.
And I knew that there would be no shortage of patients. So my initial idea was to go there and, you know, learn my craft there. And I'm still here. Right. I love it. It's been an amazing experience for me.
So what was your mindset going into working for a DSO?
So my mindset was go in, learn your craft, learn how to communicate with patients, you know, ramp up, get my speed, and then kind of reevaluate, you know, where I stood.
And what was that, a 9-month plan, a year plan, 2-year plan?
It was about a year, year and a half okay. that I was planning.
And with almost 3 years later now, right?
Yes, almost 3 years
later. And so what is your plan now?
My plan is to still stay with the DSO.
Okay.
I'm planning to open a practice with them.
Okay.
I think you know, I've talked a lot and looked into other options, but, you know, with my wife and me looking for the work-life balance, mm-hmm. I think that that's going to be the best.
All right, so talk to me about when you say planning on opening office, are you going to be an employee?
Yes, I'll be a W-2 employee okay. of the office.
Will you be an owner?
Yes, I will be an owner with them.
Okay, so you'll have a percentage ownership?
Yes.
If you don't mind sharing, what kind of percentage ownership will you have?
49%.
49%. So mm-hmm. essentially, you're almost 50-50 ownership.
Yes.
Okay, so you're in a DSO that happens to provide an opportunity for ownership.
Correct.
How important was that for you to stick around?
It's pretty important. You know, I initially, like I said, my plan was to kind of reevaluate my plan after about a year, year and a half. And the more I thought about it, the more appealing, you know, the option became.
All right. All right. Are you confused by all the implant messaging out there? Are you worried about which implant to choose, what kit to choose, what tie base to use, when to use what, when to send it to the lab, when to mill with your CEREC machine? When to print guides, when to mill guides, when all of these things happen, you're not alone. It's getting noisier and noisier out there today. And what you need is a simple solution with a consistent workflow that simply works. At 3D Dentists, we teach how to do digital implant dentistry, leveraging your CEREC technology and leveraging your cone beam technology in a proven workflow that is efficient, predictable, and profitable. You owe it to yourself to take one of our workshops by visiting 3D Dentists at www.3d-dentist.com and learn more about what we're teaching. I look forward to seeing you at one of our workshops. Now, let's get back to the show. So let's talk about a couple other things, you know. So now you're here in Raleigh, North Carolina with me at 3D Dentists, mm-hmm. and you're taking our implant integration course. Yes. You guys recently added cone beam to your yes. practice that you're currently in, okay. And you've obviously had CEREC there for a long time. Mm-hmm. What are your expectations going into a CE class that's probably one of the more expensive CE classes that you've taken?
Mm-hmm. So,
you know, I mean, I assume you paid, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't check, you know?
I mean, with the cone beam, you know, it's a very expensive piece of technology, and we want to leverage that technology immediately because, you know, the longer it's there, the payments, you know, they're not slowing down anytime soon. So for us, what we want to do is we want to integrate implants into our practice more predictably, which would include CEREC Guide. So for us, taking this course was kind of a no-brainer because we want to be able to integrate implants with the cone beam, with the CEREC Guide seamlessly, easily as possible, while also showing the patients the power of the technology and how we can make implants very good for them.
What was impactful for you today? Something that you probably didn't, maybe that you learned that you did, if anything at all, that you learned that you didn't expect to learn.
The workflow, when simplified, it gets very intimidating at first because there's so many different buttons, there's so many different ways to navigate around the software. You're not really sure where to start. But you manage to distill everything into a very simplified protocol that makes it very almost simple, I would say.
It is simple. Yeah. I mean, that's what I think about the Dentsply Sirona workflow is that it's pretty simple. It's at the core of it. It's a very efficient and effective workflow.
Yeah.
What else about the class today?
The small classes, you know, having the hands-on with the teachers and being able to do everything. You're very much a believer in letting everybody, you know, make mistakes in the software and learning that way rather than just holding your hand and guiding you through, which I feel like is the best way to learn.
Yeah, you got to click the wrong button. Absolutely. It's like when people say, "Hey, well, what happens if I do this?" I'm like, "Click it and let's see. Let's find out."
Yeah.
You know, don't be afraid. It's my computer. Mess up my computer. Don't go home and mess up yours, you know? That's awesome. So, what's next for you? What's next for Ronnie Tay? What are your goals clinically? Let's talk clinically now. Mm-hmm. What are your goals clinically?
So, clinically, I know that I've always wanted to add implant placement to my...
So are you currently placing implants?
I am placing some.
Okay. Define some. What does some mean?
I've placed two.
Okay.
So far.
Like literally some.
Yeah, literally some. But, you know, I knew that I wanted to go down this path. So about a year out of school, I took the Gordon Christensen oral surgery secret to Dr. Corner.
Okay.
Because I knew that in order to place implants, I need to learn how to take out teeth predictably, graft the sides predictably, and make sure I have nice healed ridges.
Okay.
And then this summer, I'm going to be taking Implant Pathway.
Okay, Justin. That's great. Yeah.
Dr. Moody. I started session one online.
Okay.
And then I'll be taking the rest of the course.
And then you go out to Phoenix and do that.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about the investment in all of this. None of this stuff is inexpensive, right?
No, it's not.
Okay, and none of this is the stuff that's provided by your DSO.
No.
Now, you guys have good education provided by your DSO. You happen to be with one of the top two or three DSOs from a quality perspective, in my opinion. And what goes into that thought process? Because the reason I ask is what I've seen, my experience has been that DSO associates often only get DSO training. Mm-hmm. They very rarely, from a pure economic perspective, look outside of that.
Well, in my opinion, you get what you pay for when it comes to education. And you need to do your research. You need to really believe in the instructors. Mm-hmm. And from everything I've heard about Implant Pathway and your courses, you know, I've been listening to you for years.
Well, you have a biased person in Davil. So,
that may be true. But in taking these courses, yes, there's an initial investment and, you know, we're not going to be able to do some of the things with the money that my wife would have preferred us do. But when you look long-term, this is something that I'm using for the rest of my career.
Yeah.
And I can you know, with my extraction course, I got an immediate return on investment on that.
Because we have lots of patients that need extractions.
Yes. And, you know, being able to integrate that makes it more convenient. Then I can see how big of a service it is. And adding implants to that's not going to help my patients, but it's also going to help my production go up. And eventually, it's going to pay off very, very quickly.
Yeah. Let's talk about, so you've mentioned that you want to do implants. Do you think that you would be as excited about implant dentistry without the technology?
I don't think so, because as an associate and having very little implant experience, implants can be a little bit scary. You know, there's sinuses, there's nerves. You don't know if you're going to go out.
We went through the class that the sinus was the least important
vital
structure. Yeah. I prefer that you say the nerve first, but
Yeah, but in dental school, the sinus is the black hole.
Right. So but it literally is. You can mess with it, though. Yeah.
But, you know, for the technology takes away a lot of the guesswork.
Yeah.
You can plan with more confidence. You can look the patient in the eye and say, I will not hit with great confidence that I'm not going to hit anything.
Unless I'm stupid and do something badly.
Yes.
And at that point, you deserve to sue me.
But, you know, 98% of the time, this is going to go perfectly where I want it to go, very predictably, and it's going to give you a good restoration, a great prosthetic position, while also respecting all of the anatomy.
All right. That's good. So, so what else? What is, okay, so after you conquer implants, do you have a, how far out, let me ask you this, how far out do you personally plan your CE or your goals, not necessarily the specific CEs, or let's ask the question in a couple of ways. How far do you plan out your specific CEs you want to take, and how far do you plan, like, what's next, or what branch of dentistry after implants is next?
So I haven't necessarily planned out a lot of what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to get an implant, so I did the extractions. We happened to be purchasing a cone beam, so I sped up know, my implant training, because I knew that that was something that I wanted to integrate. And with a cone beam, it would allow to me to make that transition a little bit easier. But next, I think I also want to get better at my restorative dentistry. So I've been focusing to this.
And what does that mean, restorative dentistry?
Just the quality of dentistry. I want to,
Are you doing bad dentistry now?
Not necessarily, but I feel like I could always improve.
Like when people say I want to improve my quality, I'm like, wait, are you doing bad dentistry today?
No, it's not necessarily doing bad dentistry, but I guess the dental school in me is always, I want to do better.
Yeah.
So seeing some of the work, like next year, I want to take the, complex restorative course by Strupp and Brum in Clearwater. That's a course I wanted to go this year, but with all the CE that I'm taking this year, I was a little bit tapped out on funds. But
so you've thought about more than just this year. You thought about next year.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to take courses that have an immediate ROI because I am investing this.
How do you determine what's the immediate ROI? Is it what like people say that all the time, but what are you determining that from?
Well, with this, for example, with this, with the extraction course, I was able to go back on Monday, take out teeth with more confidence.
But did you know that before you took the extraction course, that you had patients that needed extractions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we were getting a lot of patients with extractions, and I was able to do it, but not to the same level that I did.
Do you know that you have patients that need implants already?
Yes.
Okay. So that makes you confident that implants is a good place for you?
Yes.
Do you know that you have patients that need complex restorative?
Yes, there are a lot of patients. That's definitely a hidden market, and I do have a lot of CE on that road to take. But I know the ROI on that course isn't quite going to be there as it's going to be for implants immediately. Okay. I know that those courses will make me a better dentist with like a comprehensive work and you know, just better fundamentals. Yeah. But initially, I think with the implants and the extractions, that's something that I can incorporate immediately, implement on day one, and basically change the way that I do dentistry.
The reason I say these things and I talk about them is one of the things that I don't think people are doing enough of, and it sounds like you are in this particular situation, is they're not taking CE that serves their current market. In other words, people are taking CE for things they hope to do and they hope to attract those patients. And the real way to get the most bang for your buck in CE is to take CE for things your patients already need, okay? Things that are in your practice already. And it sounds like you're doing that, like extractions. We definitely have extractions there, correct? Implants, you definitely already know that you have patients because you guys are doing implants in your practice and you wanna participate in that. You have patients that are already accepting more than single tooth or even more than quadrant dentistry. So you're like, okay, I can learn that. And that's something I can bring back to my office. You know, endo would probably be one of those things.
Yes.
Where do you stand on endo?
Endo, we have an in-house endodontist.
Okay.
So it makes it very easy for me to refer out. But
that person may not be there forever.
Yes. And, you know, it's definitely on my list in terms of items that I do want to add to my repertoire in terms of doing that.
Yeah.
For sure.
All right, good. What other advice would you give to young associates out there?
I would say just have an open mind, you know, DSOs get a bad rap.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
You know,
did that affect your decision in the beginning?
It did.
The rap that DSOs have?
It did. You know, you can't discount everybody's, you know, you hear this, you hear that, whether or not it's true or not, you know, you don't really know until you explain for yourself. And I'll say everybody's experience is different.
Yeah.
I have friends who love it where they are, and I have friends who couldn't stand it and they left immediately. So it really depends on your style and what you like. But, you know, from my standpoint, I've had no issue with any sort of clinical autonomy. I can do whatever I want in my practice. Mm-hmm. There's no strings. There's no one telling me what to do or how much I can produce. It's completely up to me. Okay. And for me, that was the most important part. the day that someone tells me this is the way I have to do a crown prep, or this is how many crown preps I have to do in a day, I'll leave.
Okay. Is that clear to you?
Yeah. I don't want to anybody to dictate how I treat patients.
What about this concept of golden handcuffs, that people go to work for DSOs and they make good money and then they feel stuck? Is that true?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
I feel like if you're in any position, you can always leave.
Okay.
You know, if you're really that unhappy with the way, if you don't agree with their philosophy, there's always an out.
Okay.
And in my opinion, if it doesn't jive with their philosophy and it's not something that you agree with philosophically and you can sleep well at night, then I say, you know, that's probably not a great place for you. But for me, knowing that, you know, I can do great dentistry, I can serve my patients well, and also improve my clinical dentistry, I feel like that's definitely something that I can sleep well at night with.
While we're still on the topic of DSOs, mm-hmm. Not all DSOs are created equal, mm-hmm. okay? And not everybody understands that some DSOs are actually quite good. Mm-hmm. Some DSOs are actually quite bad, mm-hmm. okay? Do you have your friends or your dental school buddies look down on you, you think, sometimes?
I don't necessarily think so. A lot of my friends are with DSOs.
Okay.
And a lot of my classmates, you know, they're doing their own private practice, their own fee-for-service kind of deal with their things, and that's all great. But I don't really feel like anybody's really looking down at me because mm-hmm. everybody's kind of in the same boat. It's not exactly easy to find private practice positions because either hours or there are not enough patients mm-hmm. or maybe they go into an environment where there's just not any mentorship in right. private practice and in DSOs.
Right.
So, you know, I don't necessarily think that all of the problems are unique to DSOs, but I definitely think that it's something that DSOs definitely get a bad rap.
Okay. How can we change that? Or should we even bother? Or should we care?
I don't know. I mean, it's the perception, right? Yeah. Until more people go into it and they see, you know, how it is for themselves, they're going to tell their friends, they're going to tell the people in the class below them. That's what's really going to yeah. drive it.
You know, I'm not for or against mm-hmm. DSOs. You know, I'm for dentistry. Mm-hmm. And I'm always a believer that DSOs exist because mm-hmm. Private practice dentistry didn't serve a need. Mm-hmm. for the consumer public, okay? Yeah. In other words, we left a gaping hole mm-hmm. and smart people came in and they built a business. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that bothers me about this hatred towards DSOs is that most of us live a DSO life. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is most of us shop at Starbucks. Starbucks is DSO coffee.
Yeah.
Most of us go to Home Depot. Home Depot is DSO mom and pop. Hardware store. Mm-hmm. Most of us go to Marriott and Holiday Inns and things. I have to say Holiday Inn because we own a few. Yeah. You know, Holiday Inns and Marriotts, which are DSO of the hotel industry. But yet we have such an issue with DSOs being in our profession. Mm-hmm. But yet we live a DSO life in everything that we do. And so I call those people hypocrites a little bit, you know, and it drives me a little bit cuckoo.
But I feel like that's kind of the general trend in all industries, not just dentistry. So, you know, I feel like a lot of companies are consolidating, and that's just due to economics or anything like that. But, you know, dentistry is not immune to everything.
If you're confused about how to grow your practice, then you need to hear the rest of this message. Listen, the ways of the 1980s and the 1990s simply do not work anymore. You have to be different. And the way to be different in today's competitive environment is not doing more of the same thing that everybody else is doing, but adding new services to your practice. If you're looking for a solution that's logical, practical, and full of business tips to how to implement strategies into your practice to add new services, then you need to look at my company, 3D Dentists. We provide fantastic training that will help you grow your practice by adding new services to your existing patient base. If you want to learn more, all you got to do is visit www.3d-dentists.com and look around and see what's right for you. If you have any questions, don't ever hesitate to reach out to me. Now let's get back to our show. You know, I want to talk about something. It just came to my head. We were talking a little bit about, out of dental school, if I asked you that you could have 100% collection rate or 96% collection rate, which would you shoot for? When coming out of dental school?
100%.
Okay, what would you shoot for today?
96.
Why?
Because when you take risks and you give patients the opportunity, they will do more treatment.
Yeah, so the analogy I want to use, or the example I want to use, because I'm a big believer in this. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's one of your colleagues from your organization that I heard this from, and I'm like, yeah, that put into words what I felt, right? And is, do you want 100,000, you want 100% of 900,000 or a million, or do you want 96% of 1.3 or 1.4 million? Mm-hmm. And I'm a big believer in extending payment plans or monthly payments to my patients. Okay. It allows dentistry. Yes, it's a risk, but allows patients to say yes to more dentistry and allows people to get the care they deserve.
Yeah.
In our conversation, just with the guys here earlier, you talked about what percentage of your patients do you think are on payment plans?
I would say 60 to 80%.
60 to 80%. Yeah. And I bet you if we went around the room in our classroom today, all the private practitioners, that number would be 5 to 10%, if that many.
Yeah.
And to me, that's one of the biggest difference. So one of the things I want to start talking about a little bit, maybe not today completely, but is what, instead of our profession complaining about DSOs, what can we learn from DSOs? Because they're doing many things right. Certainly from a business perspective, they're doing many things right. Yeah. Okay. So what can we learn from them? And to me, one of the things that we need to learn is they're not shooting for 100% collections rate. Because they want to take a risk, and they're willing to accept a little bit of bad debt.
Yeah.
Because when you do that, you're going to have more people say yes.
Yeah.
You know? And it allows people to say yes to some dentistry. And where it really wins is when people say yes to additional dentistry for that tooth you're already doing. Let's go ahead and take care of this tooth right in front of it, or the tooth right behind it. And that's when we become massively, massively efficient in our practices.
Yeah. And, you know, $1,000 is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money to me. I don't have $1,000 in my pocket right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we say that every day, you know, we're presenting treatment plans that are, you know, a crown here and a couple fillings, and you're looking at $1,500, $1,800, $2,000 really quickly. And I mean, I don't know if most associates with the school debt and all that kind of stuff can even afford that money right out.
They can't.
You know, think about a patient who's making, you know, less than half of what we're making as a first year associate. I mean, it's a lot of money. So being able to break that into a monthly payment, and, you know, maybe that decayed tooth won't need a root canal or extraction and an implant a couple years down the line, you're still doing the patient a service, and you're also, you know, making some production as well on the side.
Is there anything else that you can think of that that private practitioners can learn from DSOs?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hello, podcast family. T-Bone here, bringing you our newest live patient implant training, Full Arch Express. For dentists already placing implants and ready to level up and continue building their implant practice, this is the golden ticket. We're diving deep into full arch implants, the hottest game changer in implant dentistry. In this program, we tackle both overdentures and All-on-X fixed hybrids, mastering techniques that are essential for modern, comprehensive dental care. It's about getting your hands on the tools and techniques that will replace the doubt and fear with confidence and predictability. Here's the kicker. There's live patient training right here in North Carolina. You're not just learning theories. You're in the operatory doing real work on real patient from start to finish, guided one-on-one by our expert 3D mentors. You'll learn the nuances of each approach, ensuring you can cater to a wide range of patients to maximize revenue. Speaking of revenue, with me, you know it's not just about the clinical skills. We're bringing business into this aspect too, teaching you how to integrate these advanced services profitably into your practice. So are you ready to rise up to the top in implant dentistry? Join us at the Full Arch Express. This isn't just another course, it's a career-defining leap. Head to www.3ddentist.com to enroll in our next session. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now, back to this week's episode.
I think a lot of dental students want to go to private practice, mm-hmm. but I don't think that there's really a lot of spots.
Okay.
And, you know, when I say that, yes, do dental students want to go to the main big cities? And we're always talking about an availability.
But that's where the DSOs are, by the
way. But, you know, there are spots everywhere. But when I was applying for, and then I'm speaking anecdotally, of course. Right. When I was applying for
positions. That's such a dental school word, by the way.
but when I was applying for positions, you know, I got a couple callbacks from private practice and I got no offers.
Okay.
So, you know, whether or not that was because I was new or whether it's because they weren't willing to take on another associate, whether they couldn't give me, you know, more than one day a week, you know, here or there. I feel like that's kind of the major issue is more private practice dentists would be, you know, giving these spots to dentists and, you know, keeping that private practice cycle going, we'd have less dentists going.
I think really what you're saying is private practice dentists need to take a little risk with hiring new grads.
Yeah.
And we might find diamond in the roughs like Ronnie Tay, right?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, you might, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes you're going to not find diamonds in the roughs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm probably the best example of not finding diamonds in the rough with associates. But what I'm unwilling to do is give up.
Yeah.
You know, and because I know in the long run, it's like I'm convinced that as private practitioner myself, the only way that I'm going to compete and survive or thrive, I shouldn't say survive, the only way I'm going to compete and thrive in an environment where DSOs are growing is to learn from them.
Yeah.
And that's going to be multi-doctor practices, mm-hmm. at some point bringing in specialists, mm-hmm. at some point being able to create an environment where you can provide high quality dentistry, mm-hmm. in a single location. And, you know, the saying that drives me crazy amongst dentists is, well, you become a jack of all trades and master of none. And I think that's total BS. I think we've reached a point today where you can be a very good master, maybe not a true master, okay, like a sensei or whatever, right? I don't know what those words mean necessarily, but you can be a very good master of a lot of procedures now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that revolves around technology.
Yeah.
Technology is the democratization of dentistry.
Yes.
You know, it makes what I would have never thought of doing, you know, 3 years out of dental school, mm-hmm. I would never have the guts to say I want to place implants. Mm-hmm. But times have changed, you know, and today it's not unusual for dentists straight out of school to invest in technology, to take a risk in technology, and to start placing things that used to have to wait 10 or 15 years to do.
Yeah, and, you know, by no means am I planning to take on cases that are outside of my comfort zone, you know,
but we sometimes we don't know what our comfort zone is. We have to learn.
Yeah, but I you know, I like to be more guarded with these kind of things. But, you know,
that's what I used to say.
The technology allows you to take the guesswork out of it to make sure that you're giving the patient a good restoration.
What did you think about the case I did today?
I thought it was good. Yeah. It was really good. It was very cool to see someone doing it live. And, you know,
how long did it take me of actual work time?
Probably 15-20 minutes.
And what did I do?
To extract, section the bridge, mm-hmm. extracted the teeth.
How many teeth?
Two teeth.
Okay.
You place an implant.
Okay.
You place the scam body.
And we grafted.
And you grafted.
Yeah.
With the sticky
And I took
bone.
My final impression.
And then you also put scam bodies on
other implants that we had already
other
done.
Implants, and you uncovered a couple of implants as well.
Yeah. All in like 20, 22 minutes, somewhere in that ballpark. Yeah. And to me, that's all about technology.
Yes.
Because the work was done in advance.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, the work was done, as you guys learned today, through the planning phase and the guide phase and the restorative phase and virtual wax ups and kind of knowing where things are going to go. Mm-hmm. And that's really where the work was really done at today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's awesome. Not so bad, was it, to come on?
It wasn't.
What can I help you with? What questions may you have that that I can help you with?
I don't know. I've listened to so many of your podcasts. Okay. I feel like
it's, I'm a broken record. I say the same thing.
Not necessarily a broken record, but I mean, you always have wisdom to offer. Yeah. But
what are you struggling with?
I feel like I could always get better with case acceptance.
Let's talk about that. What is that? What do you mean by that?
You know, whether it's like small phrasing here or there, or even, you know, communicating with patients. I feel like even the pearl you mentioned today about, you know, getting straight to the point instead of like beating around the bush, like, you know, a lot of us
like the whole investment, like this is an investment. Come on, that's sales words. I'll say a word that you said today during our conversation that I don't want you to use anymore. That's prosthetic.
Okay.
We don't need to use that word with our patients.
Okay.
You know, we're not giving them prosthetics. That's like a leg that snaps on and off. And no patient wants a leg that snaps on and off, right?
Yeah.
We'll give them teeth. We'll give them something to function with. Yeah. Give them something to chew with. And I probably even wouldn't even use the word function with them. We'll just give you something to bite with and chew with, you know? I think case acceptance, because you have, I can see that you have the demeanor, okay? You have that heart to do good. I think really what I'm seeing with more and more young people is we're overcomplicating it. Simple. Talk to people in their language. You know, talk to people on a everyday language. Like I don't say you have interproximal decay. Like you have a cavity between your teeth. You know, just things like that. Things that aren't dental school. Okay. I think the more we can do that, the better. I think simple things like phrases like, Mrs. Jones, if you are my mother, assuming their mother's age.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't say that to a 30-year-old, okay? when you're yourself a 28, okay? Or 29, you know? But if you were my mother, if you were my sister, if you were my brother, if you were my father in the chair, this is what I would recommend for you. You know, I think little things like that, it's the little things. Some of the things I mentioned today was words matter.
Yes.
Now, words are important. The things we say to people matter. You know, and I think we got to work on our words.
Absolutely.
We got to work on talking less. We got to work on talking slower. Not slow, but slower. We got to work on asking people if they have questions, you know? Yeah.
And even something as simple as, you know, when you asked, you know, how much does your implant cost?
Yeah.
And then we're going into, well, the extraction costs this, the bone graft costs this, the abutment costs this. Well, if you need a custom abutment, then it's actually going to cost this. But then if you need an implant versus just, it's going to be $3,500.
Whatever the number is,
you know.
Yeah.
But just having a single fee just immediately simplifies the process and makes it easier for everybody.
Yeah.
Because even for us dentists, the numbers sometimes can get a little bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
So I can't imagine how it'd be for the patient.
And then it can be overwhelming for your team members.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those things. Look, Rodney, I think you're going to do great with all this technology. We appreciate you investing in 3D Dentist to come out and do it. Not just the money that it takes to take the class, but the Saturday and Sunday and the Friday flying here and stuff that you took away from your family and your wife. And the weather is probably better in Sacramento than it was here. So
yeah, it's a little bit rainy, and I was hoping it wasn't going to be as rainy when I came out here. But you know, thank you for having me. You know, your courses are awesome, and
they're
really distilled down to the essence of what you need to know without overcomplicating things. And I feel like that's the value.
Well, I'm only so smart, so I can't teach. I can only teach as smart as I am. So thanks, Ronnie.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. If you've taken sleep apnea training to only get back to your practice and not be able to reap the benefits, then you need to listen to this message. I've teamed up with Dr. Aaron Elliott, and we provide a level one sleep training that's focused on implementation. It's not focused on all the science. It's not focused on all the things that could possibly go wrong or go right. It's focused on how do I get my team on board and how do I make this a part of my practice that's not complicated. So, If you're looking for sleep apnea training that just gets you started, that's down to business, that's not full of any fluff, then you need to take our Level 1 implementation program. You can find out more by visiting www.3d-dentists.com and look for our sleep apnea implementation program. We look forward to seeing you at a seminar soon.